What a truly profound honor it is to stand before you tonight, to offer a vision for the state we all love. In the East Gallery, I'm joined by the man I often joke about as my long-suffering husband, Ted Doughty.
You're listening to the State of the State Address with Governor Laura Kelly.
Ted has truly been a pillar of support for me and for our daughters. Over 30 years, but especially these last 13 months. Our daughters, Kathleen and Molly, were here earlier this week. You know, every time I see them, I'm reminded of why Ted and I made Kansas our home over three decades ago. It was a very wise decision. The upbringing that we were able to give our daughters in this magnificent state helped mold them into two remarkable individuals. I am very proud of them and the strong, talented women they have become. My partner in this journey, Lieutenant Governor Lynn Rogers, sitting right here, is here with his wife, Chris, in the gallery. Right there. Kansans will be hard-pressed to find a more energetic, big-hearted, and dedicated Lieutenant Governor. Lynn will be a true asset to our state as he works to cultivate growth in our rural communities. I'm also thrilled to welcome members of my new cabinet. You know, from the beginning, I committed to building a strong, diverse, dynamic group to rebuild our state. You'll recognize both Democrats and Republicans, women and men, a mix of seasoned veterans and fresh faces, all with a love for Kansas and a strong desire to serve. And I thank them for their willingness to take on these new challenges. And to the Kansas legislature, welcome back. It is wonderful to see so many old friends and to get to know some of the new leaders we have. I know I'm in a new role, but I want to maintain my working relationship with all of you because we're all in this together. We've got to be pulling in the same direction. There is so much at stake, and I look forward to working with you. It's been quite a week. I'm not usually one for ceremonial fanfare, but I have to say I've treasured every minute from the day of service to the inauguration on the Capitol steps to this incredibly surreal moment. But I'm also ready to get to work. My message to you this evening is both constitutionally mandated and a time-honored tradition. Of course, the personalities and the dynamics change and then shift over time, but the backdrop and the fundamental task at hand never change. I am here as your governor for the year to offer a blueprint for the year ahead. You are here as lawmakers to enact a budget. This is something that has been done 157 times before. And yet something feels different tonight. You know, after a decade of crises, starting with the Great Recession and followed by a self-inflicted budget catastrophe, we found ourselves at a turning point. We were at times weary, frustrated, and sadly, untrusting of one another. But in the end, it came down to a fundamental question. We had to ask, what is Kansas worth? This was not just a matter of dollars and cents. It forced us to re-examine some of our most deeply held convictions, and it was a painful process. But as problems piled up, we had to accept reality. In 2017, we defied the odds, acknowledged the mistake, and hit reset in an historic act of bipartisanship. That is what it means to be a Kansan. Regardless of our state's partisan breakdown, our crowning achievements have always been won on middle ground. Now tonight, we'll start a new chapter. We must unite around the values we share. We must always remember the people who sent us here. They expect compromise and results. But we also must strike a delicate balance in the days ahead. It will require an acknowledgement of the entire Kansas story, not just one fiscal year or one moment in time. It is with this renewed sense of purpose and appreciation for our past struggles and an optimism for the next chapter that I proudly report that the state of our state is improving. Mm-hmm. 2019 offers an unmatched opportunity for Kansas to continue its upward climb. But for our fragile recovery to continue, we must resist running to our partisan corners. We must keep our eyes fixed on the task at hand and the job we were elected to do. And all of that begins at the heart of our communities, our public schools. Just a few weeks ago, a story in the newspaper caught my eye. It was about a young man named Braxton Morrell. Braxton will graduate from Ulysses High School and Harvard University. That's right, Harvard. This year, at the tender age of 16. He will graduate with a bachelor's degree in government and a minor in English, and all while he is still in high school right here in Kansas. He's got big plans after graduation, too. I think he's heading off to law school. Braxton is obviously a uniquely talented student, but he also reminds us what young people will accomplish when given the opportunity. Braxton is here tonight in the East Gallery with his family. I ask you to join me in recognizing this amazing young Kansan. You know, students like Braxton exemplify the transformative power of our public schools, a place where all Kansas children who strive can reach their potential and overcome any obstacles, no matter where they come from. But only if we, as elected leaders, hold up our end of the bargain. Unfortunately, throughout the decades, Kansas has made promises and then fallen into a troubling pattern. It begins with the promise from elected officials to fund our schools, and then the failure to follow through on that promise. That is going to change this year. We will end this cycle of litigation and meet the needs of our students and teachers once and for all. The days of doing the bare minimum to fund our schools are over. It stops now. Remember, just a few short years ago, schools closed early because they literally couldn't afford to stay open. Test scores dropped for the first time in a decade, and class sizes grew, often with more than 30 kids in a single classroom. Superintendents and principals struggled to hold their districts together, often taking on multiple roles, that of counselor and bus driver. Sometimes they even refused to be paid just to keep their budgets above water. Teachers fled the state, and those who stayed received an average salary that ranked 42nd in the country. The consequences were tangible, and the scars are lasting. Never again. We're going to properly fund our schools this year and next year and the year after that, every year, every month, every day that I'm governor. And we're going to make sure our schools prepare our children for a changing economy. Modern classrooms with modern technology. Because at the end of the day, we need our children to graduate high school or college or technical school so that they can find jobs right here in Kansas and they can stay here and raise their families close to home. When I began work on the state's budget last month, this was the very first decision I made. You know, budgets reflect our priorities, and my number one priority will always be our public schools. Now I'm calling on lawmakers to act on my proposal with equal urgency. To assist in the effort, I've separated education funding from the rest of the budget. This will provide a vehicle for you to consider the matter cleanly and quickly. My friends, we have debated this issue in these halls, in the courts of law, and in the court of public opinion. Kansans flocked to the polls in record numbers this past year to send a message about this issue specifically. Now we must listen to our families, our teachers, and our business leaders. We have a deadline to meet, so let's get this done. If we act decisively, we can all share in a bipartisan victory. Because I assure you, we face plenty of other urgent problems, specifically in our rural communities. This past July, I put forth a detailed plan to address the challenges facing rural Kansas. The majority of our 105 counties have lost population last year and for many years prior to that. And whether it's roads, broadband, housing, or agriculture, they need our support. Speaker Reichman and Representative Heineman, thank you for recognizing this important challenge and is creating a new committee to focus significant time and energy on this issue And we look forward to partnering with you and the other committee members in moving this issue forward. Lieutenant Governor. Lieutenant Governor Lynn Rogers, along with our new Secretary of Commerce, David Tolan, will head up this effort on behalf of my administration. In the coming days, we will build an interconnected strategic plan for rural economic development that leverages our community's unique assets, that means developing infrastructure, addressing the shortage of affordable housing, and supporting agribusiness. We're going to cherish our rural and small town way of life, and we're going to make sure that the rural Kansans can get the support they need to thrive. And there's one more way we can do that, by expanding Medicaid. You know, just 2 weeks ago on December 31st, Mercy Hospital in Fort Scott closed its doors after more than 100 years in that community. This followed the closure of the hospital in Independence in 2015. You know, now the folks of Bourbon County will have to travel long distances for emergency care, to give birth, or just to get tests done. According to some reports, 30% of our state's hospitals are considered financially vulnerable. In small communities across the state, these facilities are at serious risk of closure. Rural communities cannot survive without hospitals and affordable health care, period. Young families, seniors, Kansans with chronic issues, or those who just want to stay healthy, no one can afford to risk their safety and well-being by living in a community without access to health care. Just by expanding CanCare, the state's Medicaid program, we can help these facilities stay open and provide health care to another 150,000 Kansans, no matter where they live. I've made no secret that expanding this program is one of my top priorities, and 77% of Kansans agree with me. You know, to date, our failure to act has cost Kansas over $3 billion in federal funding. That's $3 billion in our taxpayer dollars we've sent to the federal government that's gone to benefit other states. It's $3 billion that could have helped save Kansas lives, Kansas hospitals, and Kansas communities. Instead, we send it to states like Iowa, Colorado, Indiana, in Arkansas, or one of the 33 other states that have already expanded Medicaid. Child advocates support Medicaid expansion as a means of keeping vulnerable parents healthy. If low-income moms and dads can afford treatment for mental health or substance abuse or just everyday preventive care, they can take better care of their children, and perhaps we can keep these kids in their own homes and out of our foster care system. Senator Jerry Moran recently noted that rural hospitals are, and I quote, hanging on by a thread. And he agreed that expanding Medicaid could help them. And just last fall, Governor Jeff Collier's task force to address substance abuse disorders and the opioid crisis also recommended expansion to ease the unsustainable burden on our hospitals and our criminal justice system. We've seen Republican and Democratic-led states across the country find consensus on this issue to benefit their citizens, their communities, and their economies. For all these reasons and so many more, tomorrow's budget will pave the way for Medicaid expansion. Next week, I will announce a bipartisan working group to finalize a path forward. By Kansas Day, there will be a plan to expand Medicaid put before the Kansas legislature. I can imagine no better way to celebrate our state's 158th birthday than by embracing policy that will make every Kansas community healthier, stronger, and more secure. Please join me in this effort. And finally, another critical challenge we must address immediately, a moral crisis in Kansas that troubles me every day, and sadly, it's actually a matter of life and death. Our foster care system is at a crisis point. It requires immediate and considerable attention. This is an issue I've been working on since I graduated high school. I worked with troubled teens and children struggling with mental illness. It has been a lifelong mission to help our most vulnerable and often forgotten children. In the last few years, nothing has made me more angry than the callous disregard some agency leaders demonstrated towards our most vulnerable children and their families. The incompetence and lack of transparency we witnessed in committee hearings 18 months ago made national news, and it put a spotlight on this reprehensible crisis. Last year, when I found out 70 foster children were missing, I was beside myself. Not only that, the secretary at the time didn't seem bothered by the revelation, but I demanded answers, and together with colleagues and advocates, we demanded change. In the last year, the Child Welfare Task Force has done great work studying the problems and working towards accountability. But there was only so much we could do without full cooperation and transparency. The number of children in foster care in Kansas has skyrocketed. It's up 45% since 2011. We've seen the programs charged with helping families overwhelmed by sheer numbers in need, and the caseloads of dedicated social workers are absurdly high, making it challenging to provide the services needed by our most vulnerable children and their families. There is not an easy answer, but we must do more to protect our children. This is an emergency. These are our children in our communities facing abuse, neglect, and worse. Let's remember Evan Brewer, Jayla Haig, Makai Boone, and many more children who needed our help. These were our children in our communities, and I refuse to forget them. We must fix this now. My budget provides for funding for the Families First Prevention Services Act, a landmark piece of legislation approved by Congress last year. It will inject millions into efforts that strengthen vulnerable families and prevent children from entering the foster care system. My budget includes funding to hire more qualified social workers and reduce their caseloads. We will restore funding cuts to our prized Children's Initiative Fund, where we know our investments have the greatest impact on our youngest children. We will prioritize SCHIP, the State Children's Health Insurance Program, to accommodate federal changes so that low-income Kansas children don't lose their access to health care. Finally, working in partnership with my new Department of Children and Families Secretary, Laura Howard, we will rebuild the agency decimated by ideology and mismanagement. In November of last year, I said that in order to fix something, you have to know what's going on. You have to be able to get under the hood and see what is working and what is not. My team is already at work, and we will be transparent about what we find, and we will make it right. I know that each of you is committed to protecting all God's children, and that begins with our most needy. And I ask you to join with me in this fight. Tonight, I've laid out a few of our priorities for Kansas. We must restore funding to Kansas schools and end the cycle of litigation. We must expand Medicaid so we can create jobs, keep our tax dollars in Kansas, save our rural communities, and protect our most fragile families. We must fix our broken foster care system and do absolutely everything in our power to ensure that our most vulnerable children are protected from neglect and violence. Yet there are so many other things that we haven't discussed: our crumbling roads and bridges, public safety, higher education, mental health, meeting the demands of our rapidly changing economy. I could go on and on. And I know you're sitting there worried that I will. Another time. Tomorrow morning, my budget director and your former colleague, Larry Campbell, will walk you through the details of my first state budget recommendation, delivered 3 weeks ahead of statutory deadline. I never did that with homework in school, I gotta tell you. Later this week, I will convene my first official cabinet meeting, during which time I will instruct each member to complete a thorough audit of her or his agency so we can increase effectiveness and efficiency, and we can eliminate waste and improve transparency by ending no-bid contracts. But we have just one more thing to cover tonight, and it actually brings us back to where we started. Those breathtaking years of crisis have left Kansas on the brink of collapse. Kansas lost more revenue in the first year of the Brownback tax plan than we lost in the entire Great Recession. And while the time for finger pointing is over, we're not off the hook for the long-term consequences of past policy decisions. I'm proud to honor my promise to balance the budget without raising taxes. If we're going to succeed, I need your help to protect both sides of the budget equation until our fiscal health stabilizes. As many of you have already said, we must show restraint because ultimately we do not know what lies ahead. Kansas has endured two historic national recessions in the last 20 years. Another recession will soon be upon us. It's not a question of if, it's a question of when and how bad. Unlike the last two record-setting downturns, Kansas finds itself now completely unprepared. We have no margin for error. That's why we must be cautious. We must be conservative, and we must be fiscally responsible. We must live within our means, prioritize what matters, always look for ways to save, and always make sure our children come first. And we must work together to write this new chapter in Kansas. You know, throughout my time in the Senate, I've worked with all of you. As governor, that will continue. My door will be open, and I will listen. But I was elected to rebuild this state, and I take that responsibility very seriously. Kansans want us to work together. They want us to work together to make our state better, to provide more opportunities for our children, to grow our economy, and to make it possible for our rural communities to thrive. As your governor, I plan to do just that. That means cooperation, compromise, and bipartisanship. No one person, not even the governor, can act alone to achieve consensus. That's the whole point, working together. And in that spirit, I promise you this, I will do everything in my power to set the right tone. I will listen every day to leaders from both parties and to the people of the state. We'll take the best ideas, no matter where they come from, and we'll work together. Won't be easy. We all know we have a very long, challenging road ahead of us. These past 8 years have been a hardship, no doubt about it. But we're united by a common sense of values, that spirit of neighbor helping neighbor and respect for one another and always doing right by our children. Those are the values that brought my family here more than three decades ago, and they are the values that will guide me as your governor. Kansans are no stranger to hardship or hard work. We don't want things handed to us. We don't expect life to be easy. That raw grit, though, our fierce determination, is part of our history, and it's what makes us who we are. And if we work together, if we put partisanship aside and Kansas families first, then we can truly live up to our motto, Ad Aspera per Aspera. And the story we write together will be one of cooperation and prosperity. God bless you, all of you, and God bless the great state of Kansas. Now let's get to work.